Welcome to Get Your Spirit in Shape, United Methodist Communications and UMC.org's podcast to help us keep our souls as healthy as our bodies. I'm Joy Avino. At Christmas time, we spend a lot of time intentionally listening. Maybe we try to hear silver bells or reindeer paws up on the housetop. We ask in song, "Do you hear what I hear?" and recognize the holy moment of a special silent night. So what are you listening for as you get ready for Christmas? For the next 4 weeks, Get Your Spirit in Shape has partnered with Global Ministries of the United Methodist Church to listen along with some United Methodist missionaries for hope, love, joy, and peace as we prepare for Christmas this year. Our first missionary conversation is a re-release of an episode from earlier this year with dental missionary Belinda Forbes. She spent many years listening to God and today gives hope to the people of Nicaragua. Dr. Forbes, welcome to Get Your Spirit in Shape.
It's great to be here.
You are quite a global citizen. You were born in Northern Ireland, raised in Massachusetts in the United States, and now serve in Nicaragua as a missionary who's trained as a dentist. Does that three-continent background inform your faith and your ministry?
That's a good question. Yes, it does. I'm currently itinerating, so visiting supporting churches here in the United States to interpret and update churches on the mission I'm involved in Nicaragua. And I've been saying more and more in this particular itineration my immigrant experience. I haven't really said much about it in the past, but I've realized over the years that I do know a little something about what it means for a family to uproot themselves and leave a particular place. In our case, it was Northern Ireland during the 1960s when there was a lot of conflict and issues going on and economic issues. And my parents made this very courageous decision to move to the United States where they didn't know anybody and really started a new life for all of us as a family, in the hope that it would be a better and more stable life, like what most immigrants are looking to do at any time in history and anywhere in the world. So I think that's given me perhaps slightly more credibility with certain audiences and certain church groups that I'm talking with, because I don't look like what people normally think of as an immigrant. I'm white and I speak English like a person from the United States. And so I think it's important to identify that background. And yes, that has informed my faith, because I understand that very courageous call to go to a new place. And then as an adult, I did that very thing by being called into mission. And my mission opportunity ended up being in Nicaragua. And I've been there for now almost 30 years.
Your primary work is listed as the International Liaison for Community Health for Acción Médica Cristiana, or AMC, which translates into English as the Christian Medical Action. What are some of the things that AMC does, and what's your role within that organization?
Yes, that's a very fancy and long-winded title to say that I do just about anything I'm invited to do as a missionary, use my diverse skills in any way that's appropriate, and try not to do what I'm not invited to do. So yes, I am the international liaison. What the agency does, it's a Nicaraguan health and development agency, started by Nicaraguans, founded by Nicaraguans in the mid-1980s, with the purpose of serving the Nicaraguan people. My colleagues are health professionals, but now multidisciplinary professionals, so not just doctors and dentists when it first started. They're now sociologists and educators and psychologists and agronomists and disaster prevention experts and HIV experts. And they are Nicaraguans that use their education and skill to serve communities in very, very remote parts of the country. Many of those communities are indigenous or Afro-descendant, and most of my colleagues are Pacific Coast mestizo, so there's a lot of cross-cultural understanding and work that goes on, basically with the purpose of improving the conditions in health, but also in other aspects of a community in these remote areas. What actions and interventions can happen to help improve their lives? The agency has three main strategies. One is community health, which is anything from clean water and sanitation to maternal child health, access to health care, building health infrastructure. So in a place where there isn't a health post, helping to build it so the Ministry of Health can then run it. Community pharmacies, youth leadership, creating a community plan that incorporates health priorities, whether it's, again, water or any of those kinds of issues that I've mentioned. So that's dental health is obviously in there too, which is a specific area I work in. The second strategy is food security and nutrition, which is a development term, which basically means people having the right kinds of food on an ongoing basis. So there aren't any gaps in their access to food, and it's an appropriate food, the right kind of food for them in their setting. Nicaragua is largely an agricultural country. Most people survive by subsistence farming. So the strategy there has been to focus on how to help local farmers do better, make their crops more diverse and have better yields and adapt to the changing weather patterns that we have that are impacting some of their planting cycles, to store seeds for future use, those kinds of things. The third strategy is disaster prevention and mitigation. This emerged at the same time as the food security experiences of hurricanes blowing through and washing out not just people's crops, but also the 90 latrines that got built along the river. So to start working with communities, AMC leadership started asking different kinds of questions, like where are the most insecure places in the community? Where does flooding happen? Where should we be building the health center? Or where should we be planting our crops? And how can we be more prepared when a disaster is imminent? So early warning systems, so the people upriver can radio down to the people downriver to say, hey, the river's growing, it's time to evacuate. Where would people evacuate to? Let's build some refugee centers or organize the school to serve that purpose. So that kind of preparedness is part of their strategy. AMC is just starting a new 5-year plan. So because we work in the nonprofit world and we like to have more work, we've added two more strategies.
Wow.
One is called Culture of Peace and Violence Reduction. Mm. And this is related to again, learning over the years that you can build those latrines and health centers and things like that and have any kind of nice development intervention or grant or project. But if the relationships in the community are not stable and harmonious and working in a seamless way, chances are those projects are not going to be successful. So Culture of Peace is really looking at right relationships. How are decisions being made in the community? Where are women and children as the most vulnerable populations or indigenous groups? How are they having a role and a place at the table in those decisions? And how are development projects, whatever they might be, serving a purpose to improve the life of the community and not serve as a point of contention or competition or argument? The fifth strategy is about climate change adaptation. So I do have to get that word out there. Yeah. Some people are controversial about climate change in Nicaragua. It's alive and well. Farmers know that something is changing. They know from the cycles of planting. They know that when crops wash away or drought happens, that things are changing and that they need to adapt. And that could be changing their seed type. It could be planting at different times during the year. And learning what the impact of climate change will be in health. With more rain comes more mosquitoes, so more vector-borne diseases, really practical things like that that are important to take into account and prepare for. So even though Nicaragua doesn't contribute to the climate change problem as a poor, vulnerable country in a hurricane corridor, they are subject to the consequences of it.
You and I had a conversation before we hit record, and you mentioned how your understanding of mission has developed over the years. You've been there in Nicaragua for 28 years, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the change that you've experienced and how it's different today than it was 28 years ago.
I'm very, very privileged to have gained a dental degree and use that profession in different ways. And I really enjoy my profession. But early on, I felt like God was calling me to a different path than just basic private practice, which is a very noble calling. But I was leaning towards something else. I went to Nicaragua for a year, and it was to develop a dental program with a local church partnership from the New England Conference and a local church in Nicaragua called the Iglesia de Cristo. And that was great. We did a lot of really good things. I learned a lot and hopefully developed some programs and empowered some teachers and schools and children to take better care of their teeth. Out of that, I grew to understand a little bit more about partnerships, since the context and the vehicle that took me to Nicaragua was a church partnership. I learned more about how churches in the North and churches in Nicaragua, Christians in Nicaragua, could understand each other better and do better ministry as a result in the places where they are. So churches in New England that were inspired and motivated by what they saw in Nicaragua could come back to New England and share those stories and be motivated and help their spiritual growth happen in a new way. And Christians in Nicaragua could be motivated and feel taken into account and accompanied. Often in impoverished countries, there isn't a long-term relationship. It's often kind of drop-in mission, and or there's a few donations or some material aid or maybe a little program, and then that's it. And this partnership was really about a long-term relationship. Through thick and thin, somehow we're going to figure it out and accompany each other in this journey. Longevity in a place gives us a certain perspective that allows us to understand the people that are conversing. So my understanding of the United States, my culture of origin, my European background, and also the United Methodist Church that I come from, but also understanding the context in Nicaragua. I've been there for long enough. I'm still scratching the surface on some days, but most times I have a grip on when Nicaraguans speak, what are they really saying? And when the church groups from the North, VIM teams, conferences, individuals, or other donors or other partners, people coming to look to be in partnership with people in Nicaragua, what are they really saying when they talk? So to help people interpret not just language, but really what's the value, what's the context behind what they're saying, so that they can discern together what God is calling us to do in partnership. What is the ministry we're going to be about that makes sense, that's mutually beneficial, that has something for both sides? It's not just a mere exchange of goods or financial support.
And I like that idea of discern together, because that works not only internationally, but that can work in anybody's community. Is there anything you can tell us about how you do that? How do you facilitate holding those conversations?
I'll start with my email contact. So say a church or a person writes to me by email. I'm pretty visible. I'm not too hard to find as a Global Ministries missionary. And maybe they have some interest in coming to do something in Nicaragua. So some of my first questions are, what their expectations are, what are they looking for, what I'm looking for on behalf of AMC and the Nicaraguan people, really, that I'm there to serve, is a group that's interested in Nicaragua, that really wants to know about this particular country and this unique place, and the agency that I'm assigned to, that they want to partner with AMC and work together with them with what they're already doing on the ground, with what God is already doing on the ground, and engage in that, and not necessarily come and do their own mission project.
Well, it seems like one of the things you're trying to do is take the resources and the needs and make a match. Because if they don't match, I imagine it can make a mess.
It can. And it also dishonors my colleagues on the ground who have tremendous knowledge and experience and capacity. They know these communities inside and out, and they can help a group coming from the North to learn and grow. So that's kind of what I'm looking for.
And that's the other piece too, right? It's not one has the resources and one has the needs. There's needs and resources on both sides.
On both sides, exactly. That said, it is kind of an uneven playing field. Most of the financial resources are still here in the United States in our churches, and those are very important. I never want to underestimate the importance of financial support for projects in Nicaragua. It could be, for example, some groups have supported the construction of a community health house or a school, and maybe it's gap funding that AMC has a grant for it, but there isn't enough to actually complete the project. But the groups that we've tried to cultivate partnerships with are very aware that they're partnering with a group on the ground that has worked with a local community to develop this whole idea of what project they're doing, if it's a school or a house or a bridge or something concrete like that, or some training or education that's going on. And it's an appropriate, relevant action on the ground so that church can engage in it and feel like they're a part of something that's already happening there. And when they leave, they know that someone's there to carry it out, bring it to completion, and then follow up on it and make sure that it's sustainable, so that in a year's time, if they come back in another team or they get a newsletter from me, they know, wow, that initiative that we took and that contribution that we made is still doing something for people. That's the essence of partnership, that you continue the communication and the understanding of what your contribution has meant.
In our previous conversation, again, before we hit record for the podcast, I took a note that just said you had learned not to insert yourself into situations.
So a lesson learned as a missionary who's been around the block now for 28 years and has had the great blessing to be among Nicaraguans who have embraced me and encouraged me and helped me learn and have enough trust in our relationship now to tell me where I might not be doing something right or stepping on someone's toes. So my lesson learned in one sentence is to try and do what I'm invited to do and do that well and give my gifts and skills in that place, but to try to not butt in to where I'm not invited to do things and to hold back. And sometimes that just means doing nothing. And when we come from a northern culture where we're task-oriented, you know, sometimes our whole identity is wrapped up in what did we do? And so to not do anything, to just be, is a very difficult thing. You can't write about it in a newsletter. I went to a meeting and I just listened. I heard a lot in the bicentennial of the Methodist in Mission in Atlanta, which was a really fine event, about listening and listening deeply, that one of our primary roles as we're called into any ministry, if it's mission or the pastorate or anywhere we find ourselves, is to really stop talking. Very hard for me as an extrovert who's very vocal and wordy to just really engage in observing and listening and really trying to hear what's being said and understanding, again, the value and the context behind the words that you're actually hearing. So those are the challenges for me. They still are after 28 years. You should ask all these questions to my colleagues and my husband, who's also Nicaraguan and a colleague, if I'm on track, if I'm doing well. But they have definitely been my teachers and the people that have inspired me to learn and grow. Mistakes have to be made along the way, and we can learn a lot from failure, too. We shouldn't be afraid of failure. When we do put our foot in it, there's hopefully always a chance for redemption.
As someone who's done my ministry in the United States throughout my life, I know that there are times when someone is saying something to me, and if I don't listen deeply, I'm not really hearing them. It's not just a cultural thing. It's just kind of a human thing to be able to hear what's really being said. Do you have examples of times when that's been done well, or maybe not? You're smiling something, maybe when it's not.
Yeah, there's a cultural trait in Nicaragua called the pause. In the U.S., often our culture is, even before the person you're talking with has finished their sentence, we already have the sentence. We've already thought about what we want to say, and we're not genuinely listening to what they have to say. Sometimes we even talk over the end of their sentence. In Nicaragua, there's a pause at the end of whatever people say. So they'll say a little something, and then they'll stop, and then they'll wait. Well, I didn't know about this. So I come running in with my big explanation about something, and I go in my, and I'm also from New England, so we're very fast talkers, and we just move and talk and do everything quickly up there in the Northeast. So I'm rushing into what I'm trying to say, and I'm pa 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 pa, and I say it, and then there's the pause. I interpreted that to mean they didn't understand what I said. So I jumped right back in and used that pause and went on and on, and I said it a completely different way in probably not very good Spanish at that time, and said it all again, and then stopped and looked expectantly at the person. And there was another pause. So I jumped right in again for a third time. And then finally, I said, well, they're just not understanding it. So I did stop. There was a pause. And then the person spoke. They were waiting for me to stop talking as a cultural trait of being polite. And they weren't going to start talking until they were sure that I was done, even though I had explained the same thing three times because I didn't interpret what was going on. It's a small cultural trait, but an important one, to remember that it's important to listen, that if you're going to pause, it means you're genuinely listening for this person to conclude their idea and their what they're saying before you offer your idea or your response. A lesson learned, probably when I'm still learning, although I think I'm pretty good at that one now. But I had to put my foot in it a few times to realize what was going on. And Nicaraguans are incredibly polite. They aren't necessarily going to tell you, "Will you just stop talking, please? I'm trying to respond to your extroverted explanation."
One of the other places where we need that pause or the pause can be frustrating is in call. And people who listen to the podcast regularly know that I love call stories. And so I want to hear a little bit more about your call, how you went from dentist to missionary.
It goes back a little farther before becoming a dentist. And I was just reminded in a conversation just this week of a time in my teenager years when I was friends with a girl in middle school, or junior high as we called it, And she belonged to a Pentecostal church. So I went along because she was my friend, and I thought this would be a good place to hang out with her. And I ended up going to this Pentecostal church for probably a year and a half or so. It was an interesting experience, not one that I stuck with in my faith journey, but I learned a lot. I learned the books of the Bible. And I also remember one particular time that a missionary family came through and were on presenting in the church, and this pastor got up and raised up his hands and cried out to God in Spanish. And he said, "Ayúdame, Señor, sí, Señor." And I remember thinking, I want to do that. I want to speak to God in Spanish. How can I do that? And I was just starting to learn the language, and it really opened a lot of doors for me, and I loved it. It was something I got good grades in, and it helped me even as I was on this path of science and becoming a health professional. That was also pretty clear for me that I really wanted to become a dentist. My mother was a dentist and was a great inspiration to me, and it seemed like a good profession and a good calling, and one that I don't regret at all. It was really a good choice. But Spanish and something about serving the church or being in relationship with God in another language, that was very appealing. Jump up a few years. I majored in Spanish in college as well as my other science courses. I went off to dental school in Boston, and a small slip of paper came around when we were starting to move into the clinical side of our training. And the paper said, "If you speak another language, will you accept patients of that language?" And I had maybe 8-10 years of academic Spanish, but I'd never really spoken. I'd never been to a Spanish-speaking country. I'd never spoken Spanish in a dental setting. And I was so nervous. And I prayed over this piece of paper. And I said, "Lord, you know, what should I do? Are you calling me? Can I really do it?" And I wrote down yes on the piece of paper.
A big step.
A big step. And I handed it in. Well, I was inundated with patients. I got my requirements done for dental school way ahead of anybody else because there were only 2 Spanish speakers in a class of 120 people.
Oh, wow.
So I was called. It didn't make much sense to a lot of people. Who's this North American United States gringa person speaking Spanish and having all these Spanish patients? I learned so much. My patients were gracious and wonderful. Any patient in dental school is, but these ones in particular, they had all kinds of amazing stories of where they'd come from, and really served me well to not only train but also help my cultural sensitivity start to grow. I graduated from dental school, moved into a practice, but by then, even towards graduation, was already feeling something's different with me. I'm not feeling called to go practice with mom. I'm not even really feeling called to be in private practice full time. There's got to be something else. But our whole context at that time was grooming us to be in a high-end private practice, make a lot of money, and work only in that particular capacity.
Sure.
As dentists, which is very good and noble and wonderful, and I have lots of dental colleagues that have followed that route, and it's very fine. But I knew it wasn't for me. But there wasn't a lot out there that was an alternative to that. There were no community health programs or public health programs, and I didn't even really know what I was being called to. I didn't have a name for it. I think God calls us through a process of elimination. Sometimes we have to know and figure out what we're not called to first to then clear the way to see what we are called to. As it turns out, by then I was a member of a United Methodist Church in Boston. And the big step that I took after learning Spanish was to say to my pastor, "I'm feeling called." My particular pastor was wonderful, and he and his wife had many years of missionary experience and found ways for me to get connected. What could a dentist do in a Spanish-speaking country, and how could we help that happen? As it turns out, at that time, the Southern New England Conference and New Hampshire Conferences, this was before the merger in 1993, they had a relationship with this local church in Nicaragua who were open to receive a dentist. There was a house to live in, a community house that was purchased by the New England Conference. There were people to work with, a team of people that were there on the ground, a church partnership that was more than ready to take me in to get me started. Acción Médica Cristiana, AMC, had a dental clinic, a private practice in Managua. So there's a place to practice dentistry and see patients, and it all kind of came together. So off I went for a year. That was in 1991. I think we also have to be careful with our calls, that God may call us into something that we really can't imagine, and it may occasion us to swim against the current. I certainly used my dental career in a very, very different way. It was not what was expected of me. After the first year, people thought what I was doing was very noble. And then after a couple of years, I started to get the question, "So are you done with this Nicaragua thing yet? You know, when are you coming home?" you know, to go into a private practice and be a dentist like everybody understands. And so I think part of the call is also not just saying yes, you have to be prepared to say yes, but also being prepared that your choice may be unpopular with some people. It's not going to, you know, you need to find your mentors and people that will support you. Now, after all these years, I think people can see, yes, it was a career and a calling and the place I'm supposed to be. There's no doubt about that, that God continues to call me as a missionary. Of that, I'm quite certain. But it doesn't mean your call just stops when you decide to say yes to it, too. It can evolve and grow and teach you new things. And even in the same place where you're serving, you can be called into different areas of service.
You said that in a moment. How long of a time period was it from when you first had that initial, like, signing yes on the card nervously to the place where you had moved in to Nicaragua? And
for me, I mean, if you go back to my junior high schools of that experience in the Pentecostal church, that was, you know, in the mid-70s. So probably a space, I mean, years, really. Yeah. But when I was really starting to feel the call in dental school, that would have been the late 80s. And then I skipped over an important part of the call, which was applying to global ministries as a missionary. When I understood in Nicaragua that, you know, this was what I was being called to use my health profession skills in a different way to serve people. I was among colleagues, Nicaraguan colleagues, who also were using their health profession to serve their own people. And this, I mean, how could I not be motivated by that, to be in a group of people that felt the same way that I did? And here was an opportunity to actually do it. It was remarkable. And I came back and looked for other opportunities to make sure I wasn't just focusing in, you know, too narrowly. And everything, God kept pointing back to Nicaragua and this particular place to be. The General Board of Global Ministries trained and commissioned me as a missionary and sought fit to send me back and assign me there full time. And that was also a great part of the blessing. But if you want to talk about timeline, I wasn't commissioned until 1997. So we're talking almost 10 years from when I was feeling the call to when I actually was then affirmed and sustained and stable in Nicaragua as a missionary.
I just like talking about that because sometimes our understanding is you're called and then you go and it's this instantaneous
not at all
peace, but it was a journey.
Yes, and it requires a lot of patience and a lot of prayer and a lot of, I did a My Call video for the Higher Board of Education a couple of years ago. They had a little contest. So that's online somewhere if you want to find it. It's called #IAmCalled, something like that.
Okay.
And it talks about the characteristics of a call. So being prepared to say yes, being prepared to swim upstream, that it's not going to be popular. Prepare for your mission call. If you know where you're going, well, read up on it. Find out about it. Don't go into it blindly. Find out what the context, the new context is. And also, share your call. Remember to share it. There's some other characteristics on the video that I can't think of, but those are the main ones. Also, elimination. Find out what you're not called to first. All of those things that it's not just I wake up one day and I'm called and I'm going to do something. It can often be a feeling that God places on your heart that's there for a long time and you can't ignore it. You can try to put it on the back burner, but it's constantly there and it's something you need to act on, and it may not play out exactly the way you think. Oh, the other thing is whatever your skills are, I mean, I was trained as a dentist, but I don't use my skills in the way that even I thought I was going to. And you need to be prepared for that. You may use them in very, very different ways.
But in some ways, too, the dentistry and the Spanish came together in this really unique way. And knowing that you were not, I like that thought of like knowing what you're not called to.
I didn't feel called to be in it day in, day out. I love practicing in the AMC clinic, but I love the other aspects of the work too, to be out in communities and doing mobile service, to be training people and working on developing programs that would empower other people. There are so few dentists really anywhere in the world. There are just not enough of us out there. We can't do it all. And so my first year, I thought I was there to solve all the dental problems of Nicaragua. That was a lesson learned. I'm really not. I can't. So what better way than to use the model AMC has been using for years, which is to train local people with capacity to do dental services in their community, or to train teachers and schools to have oral hygiene programs so kids from an early age are already taking better care of their teeth, so that we don't see them years later with all the problems that can ensue from not having had that education and that access to even to something as simple as a toothbrush. those were just seemed they made so much sense for me, and it was a place where I wanted to use my profession, and I couldn't if I was just going to be full time in a practice. So I want to reemphasize: there's nothing wrong with private practice. It's great, and it is a noble calling. And again, a lot of my colleagues have done it and done it successfully. It's a great way to serve their local community. I just felt there was something more that I could be doing.
No, I didn't hear. I didn't hear anything.
Okay, good, good. Well, any of my dental colleagues are
not
listening.
For me.
Yeah,
that's
not
okay.
For me. Yeah, not and for me. And process of and really acting on that, as difficult as it was, because the expectation was that's not what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
And a call can be about that. It's about swimming against the current sometimes. So we have to be courageous too, and trust, put our trust that God has great things in store for us.
One last question I ask every guest on Get Your Spirit in Shape is, what do you do to keep your spirit in shape?
Well, beyond the daily practices of reading scripture, I have some terrific reflections that come in my email. So I do it in the digital age, but it means it's right there and accessible. And a reflection that comes in from a local church member in a church in Western North Carolina. Monday morning devotionals at AMC, our church community, Bible study with other missionaries. So it can sometimes come in pieces, but it all comes together. And particularly a group of ladies that I'm connected with in my book club. And we choose books that are from other places in the world, sometimes Latin America, but other regions, so that we don't get too focused and narrow in the context that we're in. We remember to step outside and celebrate other places and other countries and cultures that are having issues. We learn and grow from that. We have great conversation and support one another. We're actually secretly a food club, so we actually talk a lot about the food we're going to eat, because we try to align it with the culture of the book. So, you know, eating different foods and just enjoying each other's company are some of the practices that have helped sustain me.
What a wonderful image of just kind of getting together and doing those things. Thank you so much for this conversation. I've deeply enjoyed it. And thank you for your ministry.
Thank you so much. Grace and peace.
That was Dr. Belinda Forbes, a dentist and missionary in Nicaragua. To learn how you can share in her ministry of giving hope to the people of Nicaragua, click over to umc.org/podcasts and look for this episode of Get Your Spirit in Shape. We've put links on the page where you can support her work in Nicaragua and learn more about Global Ministries of the United Methodist Church and their Give Love campaign. There are also links to other episodes of Get Your Spirit in Shape and places where you can subscribe to all of these wonderful conversations that we get to share. What are you listening for this Christmas? I'll be back next week with a new conversation I had with a missionary from the Philippines who is serving in Laos. He'll help us continue listening for hope, love, joy, and peace this Christmas. I'm Joe Iovino. Peace.